All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Back Shoulder Fade. I almost forgot the name of the podcast because we ain't done it so long. And I had to think about it a minute there. But welcome back to the Back Shoulder Fade. Me and my man Josh Sampson coming to you all live on July the 4th. So happy 4th of July to you all out there. And also for those who celebrate Juneteenth, happy Juneteenth, belated Juneteenth, should I say, to you all as well. So, yeah, me and my man Josh got some time off on the holiday, and, you know, we just decided to get back in the booth and put together an episode because it's been such a long time since we've done this. So we've been trying to make it work out, but between our schedules, it's just kind of been hard. But that being said, we made it happen. Thanks to, should I say, the holiday and both of us having the day off. So, yeah, as always, we're going to talk some football here. We got a line of a great line of topics here, ranging from college to professional and even some a little bit outside of the football realm, but still kind of involving the football realm because it involves the people that talk about football. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But before we get into the topic at hand here, real quick, man, I just want to check in on my brother here, Josh Sampson. Glad to have you back in the booth, man. And how is all going for you?
Glad to be back, man. It's been a great year in terms of personal life and job and just, you know, everything. I've been doing good. It's great to be back.
Yeah, man. I know, like, you've been in terms of from a personal standpoint, it's been looking like, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to get into the booth too, man. It's been looking like, you know, it's like, oh man, they just did away with the podcast. They ain't like, you know, they ain't even buddies no more. They ain't seeing eye to eye. They think we pulled a dip set or some junk like Jim and Cam. And it's like, no, that's not the case, man. We just two busy men that just haven't had the time to do the podcast. But, you know, it's still been something that's been on our mind, something that we've continue to talk about keeping up and maintaining, and that's what we're here to do today. So we'll get into the topics at hand. We won't really talk anybody's ears off here. And this particular episode, we're going to talk about, again, it's been a while since we've talked football, so we'll just start with some of the changes that have gone on in the football world. Most notably, I guess where you start when you talk about changes, of course, you talk about players and all of that stuff. But most notably here, we are going to talk about some coaching changes here. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 coaching changes this year.
Yeah, coaching changes.
Yeah, so, I mean, and we're talking about the NFL, by the way. We'd be talking for days if we looked at the college changes. But we'll talk about that a little bit, too. But in particular, in the NFL, there were 5. I guess the first one I'll start off here with is the most notable is Sean Payton landing in Denver with the Broncos. He's going to team up with Russell Wilson, you know, kind of similar to, I guess, his situation in the Saints where he had a shorter quarterback. So it's a similar situation in that regard. But I'll let you start it off, man. What are your thoughts on that pickup? Because Sean Payton was a guy that people were trying to find out where he would end up. And, you know, obviously he's won a Super Bowl, and his name speaks volumes and all of that good stuff. But, yeah, what do you think about that addition for the Denver Broncos? And how much better do you think that makes the Denver Broncos?
Well, I think it gives them a lot better of a chance, you know, to compete now in the AFC West. But, you know, for the AFC period, you know, considering all the contenders that was in the AFC last year compared to what was in the NFC. But, you know, back to what you said about figuring out where Sean Payton was going to go, you know, we had the whole story about, you know, last year at Miami, they were trying to figure out whether or not Brady was going to leave Tampa Bay and end up in Miami, and it was the whole thing with Sean Payton ending up in Miami. That, who knows what that would have been like, especially with that team of, you know, the pickups they had. You know, they're getting Tyreek and all that. Well, not last year, but Tyreek came the year after that, but still. I think it's going to be a huge pickup. The question I asked you, you know, off the air before we even started this was, you know, what was he going to get if there's anything left of Russell Wilson. You know, he had a – it wasn't a bad year for Russell Wilson, you know, compared to what he was doing in Seattle. But, you know, it was very pedestrian in terms of what we used to seeing from Russell, whether putting the team on his back or, you know, willing him to win, you know, every other week, or, you know, him having people saying he should be getting MVP votes every year when, you know, he's not even getting not even top three or top four, you know, when the results come out. So, you know, I want to see what Sean Payton has done. You know, he's an offensive mastermind, and whatever weapons you give him, whatever system, you know, he brings to the table. So, you know, I'm excited to see, you know, what he does with Russell Wilson and, you know, not just the offense, but the team, overall team dynamic and the principles he's going to bring and the culture and all that. You know, even in the Saints didn't have all, you know, well, the Saints, they built that talent for 3-4 years. They eventually got to a point where they said, well, you know, it's Super Bowl or bust with this team. But they've always had that culture of winning culture, whether, you know, NFC Championship game or at least, you know, getting screwed. Well, I don't say getting screwed, but, you know, saying, you know, potential to make it to the Super Bowl. So, you know, I just want to see how much Russell Wilson's got left and what he's going to do with this roster.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of why he's in Denver. It's because they wanted to try and salvage Russell Wilson's career after the year he had. Obviously, he's getting paid a lot of money. You couldn't, like, offload that contract if you wanted to. It's crazy to say that because we've seen some nifty contracts get offloaded. But, you know, they were just 1 year into that deal. So I'm thinking, you know, the mindset was like, okay, whatever we do, it has to benefit Russell Wilson and getting the best out of him because we can't get off of that contract just yet. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously, Sean Payton has the resume with Drew Brees for many, many years. Again, they won a Super Bowl. I think they went to another one, if I'm not mistaken. They were at least in another one in his tenure.
They beat the Colts, you know, when it was raining. And then the other one, they didn't make it to another one. Okay. I don't think.
They might have been in an NFC championship.
You might be thinking about the Colts making it twice or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
That always confuses me too.
Right. But yeah, I mean, nonetheless, I mean, Payton does have, you know, it's not one of them situations where he went into where it's like a start from scratch situation, which we ain't expect Sean Payton to pick up a job like that. But I mean, some coaches do take those, but when you're established like him, you know, I figured he was going to go somewhere that had at least something to work with at quarterback potentially. He has, you know, looking at the roster, Jerry Jeudy. I think Courtland Sutton's still there. So he's still got like two big body receivers to work with. You know, that's huge for an offensive mastermind of his caliber because you got two of the three most important positions in football covered from that standpoint. Now, look, the third most notable position in football or most important position in football is pass rush, whether that's, you know, through a linebacker or a defensive end, whatever the case may be. You know, they don't have an answer there. Me and you were just talking about it. I think they traded Chubb to
– middle of the season.
You know, they got to find an answer there. And that has been a huge part of Sean Payton's career. I know we know him for offense, but he's had some good, pretty good defenses that can get to the quarterback too. So we'll see. Time will tell where the road leads him. But I think of all of these coaches, he's probably set up to have the most success probably immediately or the best record of all these coaches. Now, some of these coaches, which we'll get into, our first year coaches, and they'll have to overcome that obstacle of, you know, of being a first time coach. But in terms of what Sean Payton is as a veteran coach and what he has already, what's already established in Denver, that puts him a little bit ahead of the other coaches. So we'll see what their record is in the end, and we'll see if he can resurrect Russell Wilson's career. The second one, I guess we'll talk about is, and I guess it's only fitting that we talk about this because we've talked about the issue of having black coaches in the NFL is D'Amico Ryans, who historically for the Houston Texans, he's the third black head coach they've had. So
In a row.
So I think that might be like a record of some sort, because we all know what Houston kind of became known for. And it's kind of weird just to see that stat or whatever, read that off of ESPN. When I saw that, I was like, wow, like they really have, if I'm not mistaken. So that, you know, in terms of D'Amico Ryans, you know, he used to play there, if I'm not mistaken. That was a big draw for him. Is going back to where he played, or I guess that was a big draw for the organization to get one of their own, if you will. Obviously defensive mind, spent some time in San Francisco, did a good job with that unit over there in San Francisco. And not to mention, I mean, I can't think of all of these acquisitions off the top of my head, but Houston did very well when it came to offseason acquisitions, especially in the draft. So while he isn't going into a situation much like Sean Payton, where it's a lot of established talent, and obviously they had to go quarterback in the first round. We all know about that. C.J. Stroud in this draft. So that was – me and you talked about this, if I'm not mistaken – that was the out of the most notable quarterbacks in this draft. That was the one that me and you, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, had number one in terms of the quarterbacks. That's who I always said I would go with over, you know, Richardson and
Bryce Young
and Bryce. Yeah, like for the simple fact that like he just showed me something against Georgia, but. I digress from my point. That being said, though, D'Amico Ryans obviously is going to have to overcome that hurdle of being a first-year head coach. Will have to overcome that obstacle of
being a black coach.
Yeah, being that too. And having a first-year quarterback, a young quarterback, and also just a young team in general of, you know, not having established talent like Sean Payton. But what are your thoughts on that pickup for Houston? And, you know, what are your hopes, at least in terms of his first year? What do you hope to see? Of course, you don't want to see, like, you're not thinking he's going to have this astronomical record with them. But what are you hoping to see out of D'Amico in his first year with the Houston Texans, as a coach, that is?
Well, I'm hoping the Texans find another spark like they did with Deshaun and DeAndre Hopkins. I mean – they made a lot of moves in the draft. I mean, they played the top five perfectly, getting C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, who I thought were the two best players, you know, that's not offensive lineman, defense. Well, that's not offensive lineman in the draft, and you know, in their first two picks, you know, but the Texans have fumbled. I don't know if they did it on purpose with the head coach. You know, what was the first guy? I can't remember his name.
He went to Denver. Was it Kubiak?
No, it was the first black guy that they before Lovie Smith. I can't remember his name now. I don't think he ever got a fair shot. You know, one year he's out of there, then they bring in Lovie Smith, and then. You know, an established veteran head coach, kind of like Sean Payton is, and they, you know, they only gave him 1 year, and now they're giving D'Amico. I just hope he gets a longer shot than, you know, the other two coaches that they brought in. I don't know if they're doing it for show, because, you know what I mean, organizations, I can tell, like, you know, it kind of made me move away from being, you know, a Giants fan, you know, what they did with Brian Flores, you know, what they're doing with black coaches. So I hope he gets a fair shake, and I want to see the division be competitive again, because, you know, other than, you know, you guys making the playoffs, you guys being the Jaguars, I mean, who else? You got the Colts. The Titans still got to figure out their quarterback situation, and, you know, the Colts, and they're in the same boat, other than, I mean, they did draft Anthony Richardson, but, you know, I want to see the Texans be competitive. I want to make this division competitive again, because, you know, the Texans were my favorite team to watch, because of Deshaun and DeAndre, and then, you know, the show they were putting on. But now I just want to see them, you know, be competitive again, so.
Yeah, and the name that was escaping us, David Culley, who should be in the league still, not necessarily still. As a head coach. You know, you could argue he could be in the league as a head coach when you look at some of these other people that are head coach.
Yeah.
But definitely as an assistant. And yeah, David Culley was a guy I know pretty well from like the Doug Peterson tree, not personally, but I know of pretty well. And yeah, I can recall like reaching out to see if he was going to join the Jags. I wanted him on our staff so bad because players really like David Culley. They love him.
You could tell on that year that they were willing to go out and play for him. I mean, the Texans were in a lot of competitive games that year.
You know, like, he's just a guy that it looks like players, as you said, not just as a head coach, but, like, the receivers he's coached, you know, when he was a positions coach and all of that, they've spoken highly of. So, hopefully, David Culley finds him some work sooner rather than later, you know, and Doug Peterson get on the phone and call his old buddy and find a role for him in Jacksonville for all that matter. But yeah, you mentioned something interesting there where I'll veer off just a tad here is to have a competitive division again, because if I'm not mistaken, did we sweep the Texans? We might have, we lost to the Texans once. That was one of their wins.
It was an early win, right?
Right. Like it was an early win.
Before, you know, Lawrence got on that hot streak when he just turned, it was a lot of turnovers that game or something, right?
Yeah, but still, nonetheless, when you look at where the Jags finished and where the Texans finished, it was a big gap. So, you know, for my sake, I hope they don't close the gap on us. But, you know, for the sake of football, people on the outside looking in want to see more, you know, a more competitive division. Because what you're looking at in the AFC South is probably arguably bottom two division right now. But I said all of that to say this, what we could be looking at in the near future is one of the better divisions, because when you look at the quarterback situations, if the other three quarterbacks that were drafted into this division develop into what, you know, people hope them to be, those being Richardson, those also being C.J. Stroud, and also Will Levis was drafted into the division, who, you know, people have their opinions on him. But you got three young quarterbacks in this division, and they can be that young quarterback division of young and up-and-coming quarterbacks to kind of propel the league if everything goes well. Again, for my sake, I hope it don't go well for the other teams, but we'll see.
Take a look at the NFC East. I mean, just a couple of years ago, they were one of the worst. You know, the Giants weren't making any noise. The football, whatever you want to call them now, they were barely making the playoffs, and you know it was just between which team was the Eagles gonna fail first, or was it the Cowboys? I mean, and then you look last year. I mean, Guardians make the, not the Guardians. I'm watching them right now. I'm sorry. Did the Commanders make the playoffs last year? Did they?
No.
Okay, but they were close. Like it was 1 week, right, where they were like the whole division was in the playoffs. I mean, you know, it could turn just like that. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm excited to see, you know, where the young quarterbacks are going to take, you know, each team, especially Trevor coming off a second half of the season where he was just, you know, mainly unstoppable. So,
yeah. Doug Peterson worked wonders for him. I mean, recovering from, you know, going from Urban Meyer to that definitely helped, in terms of having Doug Peterson in-house and, you know, I don't know if it's a such thing as a quarterback-friendly scheme, but Doug Peterson does certainly help his quarterbacks a lot. And we saw that last year, but we're not going to talk too much on the Jags because I can go on for days on them. But going back to the Texans is some things that D'Amico also has. Again, I mentioned this. They had a good draft. Looking back at it, they got Will Anderson. So, you know, kind of going back to what I was saying for Sean Payton, not having a pass rusher, you know, you got your guy right there that, of course, it might take some time to develop, but D'Amico Ryans is going into a situation where all of the premium positions could be taken care of if they develop what they got in the draft. Mm-hmm. Because they not only got a quarterback in Stroud, they not only got Will Anderson, they got Nathaniel Tank Dell in the third round. So, you know, that's a speedy receiver that I know, like, he was a little undersized coming out of school and all of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's a guy that, you know, is kind of that mold of maybe like a Deshaun Watt, not Deshaun Watt, Deshaun Jackson type, maybe. Mm-hmm. If you will. So, you know, they have that to help their quarterback. Or that pairing, that quarterback to receiver pairing to develop and grow together. We'll see how it goes in terms of how they develop and what D'Amico Ryan has put in place in terms of a coaching staff to develop them. That's another big part of this is who do you get to develop these young men? That's what we learned from Doug Peterson, obviously, is Doug Peterson went and got Mike McCoy, a former head coach for the Chargers, that coached Phillip Rivers to be the quarterback's coach. He got Jim Bob Cooter, who we're going to talk about, established OC that's worked with like Matthew Stafford and you know, people like that. So hopefully D'Amico, you know, used his connections and brought in the right pieces that'll help him, you know, get a better record than expected if they can develop those young players, because a lot of what their roster is going to depend on is this draft class that they got and the development of that draft class this year and in the future, of course. So the next team we'll go to, we'll just stay within the division. A lot of change up in the division with the AFC South, and it's Indianapolis. They got Shane Steichen over there from the Eagles. A Doug Peterson disciple, me and you were discussing that and looked at his background and whatnot. And much like the Texans, as we said, went with a quarterback in the first round. They got Anthony Richardson, the Florida guy who me and Josh don't too much care for as Georgia and Miami fans. But nonetheless, he's a talented individual in terms of the physical traits. I understand why you would take him in the top 4 or 5, wherever he was taken. I get it, because of how Josh Allen came along, right? Like, you look at people like Josh Allen, and it's like, well, if we can get that, then, you know, we could be back on top of this division. And look, man, as much as, you know, I think Stroud was the better quarterback in this division, one thing I can't deny is that the Colts know how to scout. So, you know, they might hit on this. I hope they don't, but they might hit on this. And that being said, though, what are your thoughts on the pickup of Shane Steichen from the Eagles? And also, as I mentioned, they got Jim Bob Cooter as an OC, so I guess you can talk about that a little bit. But most notably, again, this topic is about the coaches. What do you think about his addition to the Indianapolis Colts as they moved on from Frank Wright?
Well, the Colts have been drudging for a while in the mud, trying to get this quarterback situation, you know, correct, whether it be trying to fill the hole with Matt Ryan or Phillip Rivers or you know, the Carson Wentz thing didn't work out. You know, Brissett was holding the fort for a little while. We were talking about an OC that didn't have a job anymore. Greg Roman?
Yep. Was with the Ravens. Yeah. Before that was with the 49ers.
Yeah, if you're gonna draft a quarterback like Anthony Richardson, and you might want to get an OC that could build an office around him like that, you know, to accentuate his abilities a little bit more, and, you know, like he did with Lamar. I mean, you know, Lamar got an MVP out of it. So, I mean, that's the right I see this thing going, because I don't – you compare him to Josh Allen. I mean, but Josh Allen had Brian Daboll, you know, honing his skills. So, I mean, I don't know exactly how this is going to go with the Colts. And you know more about Steichen than I do. You know, he was a quarterback's coach for the Chargers before he became the OC for the Philly. But, you know, it's hard to tell. And, you know, I didn't think he should have went as high as he did. You know, I understand why the Colts took him. But if they hit, they hit. But, you know, I just don't see it with Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, so what I will say is Steichen did get Jim Bob Cooter, who played a part in Trevor Lawrence's development, the step he took from, and that's probably, you know, them watching the Jaguars firsthand within the division, like, and it probably, Shane Steichen also probably went for Jim Bob Cooter as well, who, by the way, he was the Jaguars passing game coordinator, for not just the development of Trevor Lawrence, but again, what I was saying, his, you know, he played a part in developing Matthew Stafford, who's a different quarterback than Richardson.
Still strong arm, though.
Right, still a strong arm. So, you know, there's that dynamic. And also, too, like, what probably played a role in this is Steichen, who was a former assistant under Doug Peterson, going to Doug Peterson and saying, you know, we want to interview your guy, you know, Jim Bob Cooter. Of course, Doug isn't going to block it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yes, and it's within the division. Yeah, normally you would block that. Normally, but, you know, that's one of your former assistants. Shane Steichen is a former assistant of Peterson. And so I think it's a mix of those things of why they went with Jim Bob Cooter. And I think he is a good mind to develop Richardson. Again, you know, we'll see where the accuracy is in terms of, you know, that aspect of his game. That's what they're going to have to work on. But, you know, that was, again, that was something I questioned with Josh Allen. And he is arguably top three or four quarterback, depending on who you ask in the division. Now, look, I will say this, chances are those who struggle with accuracy, me and you talked about this plenty of times, on a college level, most times than not, it don't get better on the NFL level.
It does not. It does not translate well.
Right. So I said all of that to say this is Allen is a anomaly. You know, he's just different. I guess that ain't even the right word, but he's just, you know, he beat the odds there. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, again, and kudos to you mentioned it's Brian Daboll and the job he did. Excellent offensive mind. I was hoping that he would be our head coach, you know, when we were looking for a coach. I don't even think we interviewed him, though, now looking back at it in hindsight. But it worked out because we got Doug. But
I mean, you could tell how easy he makes it seems like how easy he makes the offense for the quarterback.
Right.
I mean, look what he did with Daniel Jones. I mean, I was ready to be out on Daniel Jones. I mean, I'm still, you know, on the fence about it. But, you know, for Daniel Jones to have the previous 2 years that he was having to making the playoffs and almost beating – not almost beating the Eagles. They weren't gonna beat the Eagles, but to having a chance. I mean, you know, that's a hell of a turnaround in just 1 year. So I mean,
yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that too. Like yeah. That's something you can speak on as a former like defensive player, is that ease that the coordinators can bring for a quarterback. So yeah, we'll see how it goes for Shane Steichen. And you know, Anthony Richardson and company. Because, look, one thing about it, in my opinion, they have the scouting department. So even if Richardson isn't, like, what they thought he would be, and if he's, I guess I would say, decent at what he does, they have the scouting department to put pieces around him and make life easier on him as well. So we'll see. And time will tell on that. And so we'll move on to the next team here. And we'll just go to Carolina because Frank Wright was formerly with Indy. So we'll just go ahead and go to his new destination. He's with Carolina. And they got Young, of course, in the first round, which I don't think nobody doubted. I mean, there were talks in the beginning of the offseason of, like, they might go a different direction. But I think we all knew when Carolina, because they traded up to that spot, didn't they, with – they gave, like, a crazy haul away, too.
Yeah, they gave away DJ Moore and
– yeah, yep, to the yeah. Bears. Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah. So, yeah, they. I think, like, when you make a move like that, you're pretty certain as a front office what you're going to do with that pick, I would think. I would think it wasn't much of a thinking process of, oh, we can go with this quarterback or that quarterback. But, you know, you never know with other front offices. But Frank Wright, who is a person I believe wasn't really to fault in Indianapolis. Me and you talked about this. I don't know if you necessarily agree, but – I think what hurt Frank Wright is just never being able to lose enough games to be able to pick a quarterback in the first round and have the luxury that Steichen has now of taking a quarterback early. Because he, you know, he had to endure Carson Wentz and freaking Matt Ryan and Phillip Rivers, yeah. You know. So in a way, Frank Wright did his job well because he was never bad enough to, like, picking, you know, early in the round. Most times they were over 500 by three games or something like that. When a owner hires a coach, that's what they want them to do is win games. And 9 times out of 10, unless you're running some funny operation where you're trying to tank, like the Dolphins tried that for two or something, like some Stephen Ross type jump. But most times it's not. When you meet these owners, the first thing he tells you to do, I want you to win games for me. Mm-hmm. And Frank Wright did that and got penalized for it. It's to me, looking at it from the outside looking in. But yeah, if you will talk about his transition from Indy, because he was one of those names, like, we didn't think he would show back up as a head coach. A lot of people didn't know. We just thought he would be a coordinator again before he got another head coach role. And You know, lo and behold, I woke up one morning and it was like, oh, you know, Frank Wright got a job as an HC, and he's going to Carolina. But yeah, if you would talk about the situation that he's going into in Carolina.
Well, like Carolina was almost in the same position as what's the previous team you're talking about? The Colts, I guess, in terms of finding a quarterback. But, you know, besides trading away DJ Moore, I mean, I didn't even realize all the free agent signs they had. To replace not only DJ Moore, but to get better at running back. I mean, they got Miles Sanders, DJ Chark, Hayden Hurst, a couple of good quarterbacks to back up. Bryce Young, well, not good, but, you know, serviceable backups. Andy Dalton and Sam Darnold. They got Dante Foreman, Adam Thielen, who was, I mean, who's still, you know, top 15 receiver to me, at least top 20. I don't think he's lost a step at all, but, I mean, I don't think he's coming into that situation to rebuild. I mean, the Panthers, especially now that Brady's gone and Peyton's not at the Saints anymore, and the Falcons are still trying to figure out, you know, what their quarterback situation or the team situation in general. Division's wide open, and the Panthers got, I'd say, the most talented team. You know, it's funny compared to the talent they had last year. I mean, they had Baker Mayfield, you know, he was ranked 34th in passer rating or something like that. So, yeah, it was that bad. So, you know, now they turned around, you know, they got rid of Matt Rhule. They, I forgot who the offensive coordinator is now, but, you know, they got a lot of talent on that team. So, you know, their division is open for the taking, and they definitely got the talent to win the division and make some noise in playoffs. So,
yeah, I didn't even think about that, how the division, how wide open the NFC South is. So, yeah, he has a chance right out of the gate because here I am mentioning that Sean Payton probably will get the best record out of these guys. But, you know, it's very possible that Wright won't be too far behind him in terms of when you look at the division and when you look at what the Falcons got, as you said. They still trying to figure out their quarterback situation. Look like it'll be Ritter. You know, we all seen what happened to a franchise when Tom Brady leaves. So the Bucs are, you know, they're in a situation where they need a quarterback. And I was looking at their roster. I think they got like Kyle Trask and
Mayfield's on the Buccaneers now. And,
yeah. Okay. So that speaks volumes about their quarterback situation. Mm-hmm. And then of course the Saints. You know, they kind of one of those mid tier teams too. So you know, they have a chance. Of course, you know, it all depend on the development of Young. Not only that, though, but keeping him upright, you know, mm-hmm. again, like he isn't the biggest quarterback. That was the big thing about him. He still went number one overall. So, obviously, that size narrative or you know, that size, that prototypical size that people used to look for, that no longer exists because we've seen it in recent history, not with just him, but Kyler Murray. Where teams are willing to go and do that, you know, early in the first round. So, but still, nonetheless, though, he does need to be kept upright and protected well. He's not one of these quarterbacks that, you know, you could see taking a beat in his first year and it helping him in any way, shape, or form. Like, some of these quarterbacks can recover from that in their first year, can, and it's still hard for some of them to do that, do have to endure that. But he's not one that I'm, you know, that I want to see. And of course, you know, the offense will probably, you know, put him in position to protect himself too. So there's that as well. So we'll see. I do want to see, like, what the end result is for this division as a whole in terms of the records and how close they are. But I think it might be a division where it come down to the wire like that last week or so. But they definitely have a chance. And, again, like, you know, Frank Wright is a coach that's been to the playoffs, obviously, and, hell, won a Super Bowl with Doug Peterson. That was his OC or quarterback coach, passing mm-hmm. game coordinator. So, in 2017, he just won the Super Bowl. So, you know, Frank Wright is a guy that knows how to, I hate using that word quarterback friendly scheme, but that Doug Peterson scheme, it looks like it's helped a lot of quarterbacks. So, that can help, this young man in Bryce Young. We'll see, time will tell, but they absolutely have a shot. And you brought it to my attention that division gives them a chance to actually, have one of the better records of teams that got a first-year head coach, and I wasn't even, like, thinking about that until you said it. So we'll see how things go there. Next, we'll go to, let's see, we already talked about Denver. We'll go to Arizona here, who they picked up Jonathan Gannon, who was formerly with the Philadelphia Eagles. Mm-hmm. So they went with a defensive mind. Interesting situation there because, you know, they have a quarterback in Kyler Murray who, you know, most teams in that situation, they go with the offensive mind, you know, when you got a young quarterback. But we aren't sure that they believe that Kyler Murray is the answer either. So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, interesting decision. They went with a defensive mind there. And I think he's the only – is he the only defensive coach? Well, aside from Ryan's that's on this list of new head coaches. But, yeah, what you think about that addition? As many would say, probably this Cardinals hire was one of the ones that was not as talked about as the other hires that we've mentioned here.
Well, the main thing I want to know, you know, if Kyler's going to get along with this head coach. I mean, the reports that there was some tension with him in Kingsbury last year about, you know, what play call and what the scheme should be and everything. But, you know, a lot of the big pieces for the Cardinals are gone. I mean, JJ's retired. You know, DeAndre, they released him, right? Or yeah, they released him. Yeah, so, I mean, they got a lot of pieces they need to replenish. So, I mean, what you said before, the main thing is Kyler Murray. You know, if he – no more thing, is he going to stay healthy? Is he going to study the playbook or whatever he's supposed to be doing? Is he going to put in the time? Is he going to put in the effort? Because right now, I mean, it's all on his – it's all on his shoulders right now. So, I mean, I get that they want to go a defensive route, but, you know, you got one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the league. Are you going to put the weapons around him? Are you going to put – who's the – I read the offensive coordinator is Drew Petsing. You know what that is? From the Browns. He was a Browns quarterback coach.
Yeah, not even, like, familiar with him. So, yeah. Like, I don't, you know.
I don't know a scheme or anything. I don't know, you know, if it's a West Coast or whatever. But so I don't know what they're going to – I don't know what the outlook is for the Cardinals. Are they going to go back to before with Kingsbury where they were – well, they still didn't make the – well, they made the playoffs once or something like that, but they weren't even close to making the playoffs before Kingsbury got there. I mean, I don't know what direction this organization is going to go in.
Yeah, of these teams, they are probably the biggest question mark. And it's probably because the teams we talked about, Sean Payton has a established veteran in Russell Wilson that he can potentially change. Carolina, Indy, and Houston have first-round quarterbacks. So we can pretty much say that their coaches are going to get a decent amount of time in their respective locations. It's a little different. The quarterback situation in Arizona is a little different because, again, we don't know what you do with Kyler. Now, look, the hope is, and probably when you're Jonathan Gannon and you take this job, the hope is, like, you can get Kyler to play at a high level, you know, like kind of like we saw early in his career at times. So, you know, you would think Gannon took this job thinking that he can revitalize Kyler Murray's career because, like, most times you don't go into these situations thinking, like, well, you know, if that quarterback fails, I'm going to need to get my quarterback. Like, you either believe that you have the right quarterback in place or you've been guaranteed that you will be around to get the right quarterback in place. One of those two things probably happened here. But I think it more so – maybe the former than the latter, is that he might believe that he can get some out of Kyler.
Or he could at least protect him, you know, with the defense. Because the Cardinals, other than Buda Baker, you know, J.J. Watt was hurt for a majority of the time. And they just – maybe they can protect him a little better in terms of field position, you know, turnover, time of possession, you know, all that. So maybe they could give Kyler a better chance on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, you know, while Gannon is a defensive coordinator, he's coming from a situation with the Eagles. Again, I think it was the Eagles he was with. Yeah. He's coming from a situation with the Eagles where he saw the development of Jalen Hurts, you know. So, like, that, you know, you can argue that Jalen Hurts and Kyler Murray have some similar traits. They aren't the same quarterback. But, yeah, maybe he brought some tools over from Philadelphia with him that can, you know, help Jalen Hurts take the step that he did last year. Because make no mistake about it, like, the Jalen Hurts we saw last year certainly didn't look like the Jalen Hurts the year before. Like, he looked night and day different. You know, like, I was one of the ones, I admit it. Jalen Hurts from 2021, I wasn't too high on him. And then, like, the step or the stride that he took in 2022 was immense. And, you know, here they are. They were what? They were in the Super Bowl, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, here they are in the Super Bowl. And he's a top six quarterback, you know, depending on who you ask, maybe higher in that regard. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind with Gannon, too, is he might have brought in some offensive-minded assistant from that Eagles tree again, going back to that organization. They, whatever it is, they got the sauce when it comes to figuring out quarterbacks in their organization. So we'll see if he brought the right pieces over with him. And
it also depends on, you know, the mindset of your quarterback. I mean,
yeah,
you can right. clearly tell from Jalen Hurts' interviews that he's the leader in any room that he walks into. You know, Kyler Murray's kind of, I don't want to say quiet, but you know, he kind of gives you that vibe that he stays to himself, but he's not ready to lead a locker room. Or,
right.
You know, so, you know, it comes down to a variety of factors. But, you know, most importantly, the mindset of your quarterback.
Right. I never thought of like that. I mean, I've thought of it, but not like now, today. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you know, these quarterbacks we talk about, like, they light up a room when they mm-hmm. come in. You know, Anthony Richardson cracking jokes, and, like, he already, like, the journalists love him, it looks like, already in Indianapolis. I can speak from spending media room time with Trevor Lawrence. Like, mm-hmm. you instantly feel like that dude's a leader as soon as he walk in. And, you know, it's not overbearing in a sense, but it's like that guy has it in terms of that leadership quality. And yeah, some interviews that I've seen or just – I mean, we don't know Kyler personally, but you don't get that vibe from him. And maybe that's something Gannon can bring out of him too. And, I mean, like the space is there to bring that out of him now, because who else going to be a leader for that team? I mean, aside from Buda Baker.
Yeah.
We just talked about it. DeAndre Hopkins, gone. J.J. Watt, gone. That leave the door wide open, like, for there to be new leadership in that locker room. And mm-hmm. you would think one of those leaders needed to be the quarterback. You know, with J.J., especially when you lose a leader the caliber of J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins,
mm-hmm.
something, you know, somebody got to step up, and it most definitely needs to be the quarterback, because obviously, like, he's the most important person in most football organizations, So we'll see if Gannon can get Kyler back on track and see if they can have a better season than they had last year as they try and recover from the Cliff Kingsbury reign. And you know, again, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, he's another dude. I think he'll land on his feet somewhere, probably in the college ranks, not necessarily in the pros, but I think I could see him resurfacing back in college. That was a big deal with him anyway. That's why Kyler ended up getting drafted. They knew him from college. So, yeah, I think, like, he's more of a, you know, a coach that'll fit well in college. And then, you know, he probably can recruit his behind off and all of that. Yeah. But we'll see where he resurfaces. I guess we'll go into, like, now that we knocked the head coaches out of the way, we won't go into, like, all of the notable OC changes, but we'll just mention a few of them here. The first one that, you know, stood out to us was Todd Monken going to Baltimore. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously, I know a little about Monken from not even just Georgia, obviously, but from his time with the Jaguars. But, yeah, what do you think about that, as he will now be working hand-in-hand with Lamar Jackson, who we are very big fans of on this podcast?
Well, let's just run through some of the, you know, status. Talking about one, you know, like you said, you got Todd Monken for Baltimore. You got Kellen Moore moving over to the Chargers. Eric Bieniemy for Washington Commanders. You know, Hackett's going with A-Rod for the Jets. And Brian Flores was finally, you know, he's with the Steelers last year, but now he's with He's a DC for Minnesota this year. But of all these, I say, you know, Monken is probably the most notable, moving up from college to the pros. But, you know, they went and got OBJ. They went and got the kid from Boston College, Zay Flowers, who's a speedster. So you could tell they're trying to put weapons around Lamar and not just having to be, you know, him and Andrews, you know, mm-hmm. you know, just playing catch with each other. So
so hopefully playing backyard football.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, I mean, maybe they get their running back situation figured out, or
which ain't hard to do in the NFL.
No. So, you know, OBJ had a whole year off. We'll see where he is come training camp or preseason, whenever they decide to put him out there. But, you know, that's the one I say I'm most excited for, other than me being a Chargers fan, is seeing what Kellen Moore can do with this with the offensive weapons we have. With, you know, mm-hmm. Herbert, you know, just, you know, the arm by itself is self-explanatory. Then, of course, you know, the weapons we got on the outside. We added another kid. I cannot remember his name now, but he had, you know, Everett, and of course, you know, Eckler, the fantasy football machine in the backfield. So
right.
That's the one, I guess that's the two I'm most excited for, other than seeing what, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to do in New York with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The enemy for me, man, because he just waited so long for an opportunity. Like, he had which is a shame in itself. He had to move from Kansas City because everybody kept using the whole, like, oh, you know, like
Andy Reid.
Yeah, the whole Andy Reid thing, which is ridiculous. And I mean, it feel like EB would be the coach after this year if things don't go well for Ron Rivera. And that kind of, for me, that kind of makes an awkward situation if it's like that. But Ron Rivera is a coach. If I'm EB, I'm jumping all over this opportunity for the sake of, even, you know, if they are looking at me as the predecessor for Ron Rivera, it's a lot you can learn from Ron Rivera. And I know, like, yeah, he ain't had the best seasons and what have you, but he was highly successful in Carolina, you know, when he was there. So, you know, it's a lot that you can learn from just being from not under that Chiefs umbrella anymore, you know. A new coach to learn from that's not Andy Reid or, you know, one of the Andy Reid disciples that are there as well. So I'm interested in, like, for EB to take in all of the knowledge he can from Ron Rivera if it comes to that. Now, if EB's the right guy, obviously it'll be successful and mm-hmm. Ron Rivera keep his job. You know, that's probably what, you know, they're hoping for. We'll see, and time will tell. But I'm really excited for him in that regard, to the change of scenery. Now, I would have hoped it was for a head coaching job, but it wasn't, unfortunately. And I think this is a grand opportunity for him. And then you mentioned Nate Hackett, who a lot of people have, you know, they killed him in Denver. You know, a lot of people didn't even like that hire when it happened. I remember it, like, Denver Broncos Twitter, from at least the people I follow from Denver Broncos Twitter, they weren't happy about it. We'll put it that way. And the whole thing about Hackett and what probably helped him get a job is Aaron Rodgers speaking highly of him in the mm-hmm. first place.
Yeah.
So now he's back with the person that, you know, has spoken highly of him. He gets an opportunity in New York. Now, look, now it's New York. The lights are bright there, and, you know, it's a Broadway show, and it, you know, it's for both him and Rodgers, it's hard to please New York fans, especially, you know, somebody who, if I can recall, was it Joe Namath? You know, they had the lights of Joe Namath there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the last one, unless you want to count Testaverde or Chad Pennington or something like that.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah. Which, I mean, like, that makes it exciting for Jets fans, too. Oh, yeah. It's been so long since they had that, so... you know, if all goes well, then, you know, him and Aaron Rodgers mesh like they did in Green Bay, which we would think they should, the Jets could be on the up and up, man. Like, that's a situation to watch, especially, like, I'm happy to see Aaron Rodgers. And I'm not a big Aaron Rodgers fan just from the press conference stuff, but I'm excited to see him outside of a Packers uniform, because I know it's something that he's really, really wanted. Like, he been hitting at it, like, and we've heard the stories.
Yeah, I think he was waiting on the right time to do it.
It was gonna come a time where he was gonna get his way out of there if he, you know, didn't retire with them. But I think he didn't want to end his career with Green Bay, in my opinion. And now he's in New York. And I like that whole aspect of, again, I'm not the biggest Aaron Rodgers fan, but I respect his game, one. And for two, I just want to see what he could do for that market, which is, in terms of the size, of one of the biggest, probably the biggest market in football, probably, in terms of the size, and how he can revitalize the Jets organization. Again, you know, they play in the AFC, and I don't want them thriving at our expense. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got a Jets rivalry going because they mad at us because we took Trevor Lawrence. Like, that's a whole nother thing. But, now they have a case that they might be a rival of ours, you know, like the Trevor Lawrence and Aaron Rodgers. Now, look, Aaron Rodgers is only going to be around for, we would think, three to four more years, maybe. I don't know with him. Not he might pull a Tom Brady and just not know when to quit. But yeah, I'm excited to see him there. You mentioned, even though this isn't the OC, Brian Flores, so happy for him.
Yeah.
Happy that Tomlin, brought him into the Steelers organization when everybody else was not trying to bring him in. Well, I don't want to say not, but it was looking like it was going to be hard for him to land somewhere. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, Mike Tomlin said, "Hey, look, I'm here for you. Come on through. You know, it won't be a DC job, but we'll get you there."
Was he like a linebacker's coach or something like that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it didn't take long, you know. No. And shout outs to the Vikings organization too for saying, like, "Hey, look, screw all that, man. we trying to win games, man. Uh-huh. Come on through, Brian." And we'll see how it goes there. I mean, like, because if I can recall too, the Vikings got a good lineage of linebackers too, like, to play for the organization. Mm-hmm. Like Chad Greenway and a few others kind of like escaping my mind right now. They had Anthony Barr?
Anthony Barr, yeah.
Yeah, so, and like,
Was it Kendricks? Or?
Yeah, Kendricks.
Yeah.
So, they got a decent lineage of linebackers to come through there. So, it'll be interesting to see if he can get their defense back to, you know, some of the defenses we've seen from the Vikings in the past. But, yeah, I mean, those were the only ones I really wanted to talk about. I mean, I can speak on Monken a little bit because just the Georgia ties and the Jacksonville ties. Excited to see what he can help out Lamar do. And I'm glad to see OBJ get,
finally
find somewhere, you know. Yeah. I mean, I think it was a short-term deal. It ain't like a long-term deal, if I can recall.
It's like 2 years or something, right?
Right. So, but still, though, I mean, 2 years with Lamar, they give Lamar enough time to figure out if he want to be with Baltimore, who everybody and their mama thought he was going to leave Baltimore and get traded. But as I've said on this podcast, man, people – underestimate the Ravens organization.
Mm-hmm.
And people were ready to, like, oh, it's the new day and age where quarterbacks, if they want to get away from a team, they can get away from a team. But they kept prying at it and prying at it until they figured it out. It wasn't smooth. It wasn't a easy process to get done. But that organization did what they always do and fall through when it matters the most. And shout outs to them for getting that deal done. And also bringing them in a change of scenery in terms of a offensive coordinator in Monken, who loved what he did in Georgia. We'll see if he can apply some of that into the NFL. He has plenty of NFL experience. I think he has been an OC too in the NFL as well, with maybe the Browns or somebody. But he has OC experience, wide receiver coach experience. So that'll definitely help Odell, too, from that perspective, you know, former wide receiver coach. So we'll see how that helps him as well. But, yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at with these coaching hires. Was there any other hire that you wanted to, like, mention or go through or discuss on the NFL level?
I don't think so. Like you said, I think we covered all the topics. I'm going through the list here. Some notables. This less notable. Thomas Brown is the offensive coordinator for the Panthers. You know, he's a big-time Georgia running back.
Yep.
Jim Schwartz is back as DC for the Browns. Nagy's got promoted to, you know, Nagy's the OC now for the Chiefs, I guess.
Right. Back to the Andy Reid tree where you came from.
Oh, Bill O'Brien's back in the pros as, you know, OC for the Patriots. And Mayo fresh off his was it 8th, 9th season, whatever. He's fresh. They turn him around. They gave him a polo. Now he's the now he's the DC for the Patriots. So
he had to look long for work.
He did not.
Nice for him. I mean, I'm happy for him, man, in that regard. As me and you discussed, like, the Patriot disciples don't have a hard time finding work after coaching. Oh, well, after they get a positions job as a coach. Like, so that can lead into something big for him. Learning from Bill Belichick. I know a lot of us hate him, but learning from him. That's good. That's huge, man.
Yeah, that's like encyclopedia of football right there. Right. So,
Yeah. So yeah, I guess what we'll do next is we'll go into
college
hire. Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about the biggest hire. Again, it's been a while since we talked about football, but the biggest hire in terms of the college football realm is probably, or at least the most talked about, is the addition of Deion Sanders, who is now going to Colorado. And he previously was with Jackson State, which is, you know, a lot of people were very high on what he did at Jackson State and you know, turning the program around and this, that, and the other.
Yeah, it kind of split the crowd on whether or not he should stay in the HBCU realm or, you know, move up to, you know, D1.
Yeah, let me ask you about it, because you played for HBCU, man. What's your take on his jump from Jackson State to Colorado? Because a lot of people had a lot of things to say about his move from there.
It's interesting. Like, it's, you know, I know we wanted to give this whole savior complex of what Deion was going to do for HBCUs and, you know, black college football in general, whether he was going to put, you know, it back on the map. But, you know, he's not the only one. I mean, yeah, he might be the most famous, but you still got Eddie George. You still got Coastal Browns. That whole beef with Baker Mayfield. I can't remember his name now, but he coaches. I think he coaches Grambling now. But you know, it's interesting. I don't know if it's. I don't want to get into this whole black plight thing of, you know, what he's going, where the money's going, or where the attention's going. You know, I hope Deion does good for the situation he's in. You know, given, if there's anything, giving black kids or minorities a better platform in the Division I scale, because, you know, a lot of it is Hugh Jackson. Yeah, a lot of it is unfair. You know, up until, you know, a couple of years ago with the transfer portal, and now you got NIL. So, you know, hopefully he gives his kids a better opportunity at another level, whether it be, you know, the endorsements that he's trying to give these kids, or the disposal he's trying to get these kids. You know, the whole HBCU, there's a whole HBCU bowl and the HBCU combine for you know, black players. Mm-hmm. They get drafted out of D2 and D3 schools. So
yeah, we said we wanted to check one of them out one day.
I definitely do.
Louisiana?
I believe that's where it is.
Baton Rouge.
Because it's in the dome, right? The Superdome.
Ain't so. Uh-huh. So, yeah, we talked about that. Yeah. Checking that out.
Yeah, so it's real interesting. You know, I was upset at first, you know, because the image that he gave off was what he was never going to leave. He was going to make Jackson State one of these powerhouses. But we saw what, I don't know how closely you followed the story, but Ed Reed was like the coach for like 2 weeks, and he couldn't.
In Florida too. When
yeah,
he
was
a Florida
Bethune Cookman. Yeah. And he can. I don't know if he couldn't handle it, or if there was irreconcilable differences, or, you know, he couldn't. Him and the athletic director couldn't get on the same page or whatever. But it's, you know, Jackson State might be it's an anomaly, or you know, in terms of, you know, what you can get money wise, and it's hard for HBCUs, and not just, I mean, it's a different level. Jackson State they're still in they're technically Division I, but a lot of these D2 schools, especially the one I went to, mm-hmm. we were one of the best. Albany State, Tuskegee, Clark Atlanta, Morehouse, you know.
Shout outs to Albany State. You know what I'm saying?
But even then, like, we're one of the best in terms of, you know, winning percentage and all that. And it's just hard to allocate money in a university like that. So, I mean, it's still a struggle. It's still an uphill battle. I just wanted, you know, I don't want to judge the discrepancy until we see the final product, I guess. So we see the, you know, where he goes next or what he does next. So I mean,
right. Yeah, I mean, like, look, he has his hands full. And before I even get into that, you know, I want to mention his medical situation. Glad that he, you know, I think he had the surgery on
last week, I think, something like that.
Okay, and he came out fine. Mm-hmm. So prayers to him that he continues to recover. And then, to get into the football side of things, like, look, man, he has his work cut out for him now, man. Like, you playing against, you know, USC now and Oregon. Isn't Oregon in that division?
Pac-12, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, at the same time, though. UCLA. Yeah, them Bruins, man. Shout out to the great Maurice Jones-Drew and Mercedes Lewis, you know. But he has his work cut out for him in between, you know, like those two teams. And there's a few others that are pretty solid there. But at the same time, it's some kids within that division that – he can maybe flip too and, you know, get to come over on there and with Colorado. We'll see. I mean, that's one thing about Deion is that we've learned over the years is he could be persuasive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that.
I mean, he did it back-to-back years, right? Matter of fact, he did it to Florida State the year before. Then he did it to Miami, this summer. So, I mean, well, not this summer, but on signing day, I think in February. Where you pull the number one recruit from, you know, from their grasp, and you got to come to Jackson State or Colorado or wherever they coming.
But yeah, man. If he, you know, getting some of those California kids' ears, man, like that's we know, like that's where a great deal. Now, it's no argument. The greatest high school football state is Georgia. Let's not get twisted. Okay, we should actually do a podcast about that.
We should.
Between Cam Newton. One of your favorites, right, in Atlanta.
Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson.
Come on, man.
Yeah, we can keep going, man.
Come on, man. Whether you like him or not, Tyreek Hill, he's from the 229 area, man.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That, you know, he showed that you can't replicate that speed that you get from here, man. But that's another story for another time. But California is a very good state for high school football, is what I was saying. And I think, you know, if Deion could get over there and get in some of those young men's ear, he can pull what Josh was just saying, how he nabbed one on Miami and the other, you know, teams that he was able to nab recruits from as well. I think that same effect applies to the Pac-12 in that West Coast region now. And, I mean, you know, he can come over here on the East Coast and nab a few from, you know, some of these schools or whatever, which, I mean, it's a little harder to do over here between how Nick Saban and Kirby Smart recruit and even the other teams in the SEC in Florida and even Miami. And, you know, it's just kind of harder to do over here and convince a kid to go all the way to the West Coast. But he
convince him to go to Colorado and that was cold all the time. But,
right,
you know.
Right. But you could definitely get one of those kids over from California. You know, Washington has had some, you know, decent high school players come out of this. I'm talking about the state of Washington, if I can recall. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. Time will tell on how he does. But I think that's the key with Deion is, you know, he brings a persuasive mind to that program. And that'll be, you know, what helps him to sink or swim. And, again, like Deion will tell you, like his big thing here is, you know, it's not really for him. He says this, and I believe him. It's not really about bringing these young men in to play football, but just making them better men.
Oh, yeah.
And I like that aspect, too, because you look at the statistics, chances are you're not going to go to the NFL if you look at it from a odds perspective. Even if Colorado State get, and I know people don't want to hear this because it's about football at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But even if Colorado get somebody who can just make the program better in terms of putting better young men in the society, that's a success. So we'll see. And time will tell on his, you know, his arrival there. Of course, you know, we'll have to monitor his medical situation and see when he can return to the field and all that. But if we all know anything about Deion Sanders, is that when he starts a job, he's going to do his best to finish it.
Yeah.
And he will be on the field as soon as possible. So
I think he said he did this early so he wouldn't so it wouldn't run into the season and all that.
That's smart. Yeah. He pulled a Trevor Lawrence, basically. When Trevor Lawrence found out his arm was jacked, I think it was the arm, and went ahead and did his pro day and had surgery so he'd be ready for the season, basically. So, yeah, smart. But – yeah, man. I'm excited to see him on the D1 level. I wish he could have spent a little bit more time with Jackson State.
That's
personally
true. Yeah.
And I wish he could have spent a little bit more time helping, if not Jackson State, you know, another historic black college of some sort.
Yeah.
But you know, his calls, he got a call to the D1. And I mean, I don't know that we can necessarily be mad at him for taking that opportunity, you know. But well, again, we'll see how things go for him. And then for our last topic here, we'll talk a little bit about some changes. I mean, again, this don't necessarily have to do with football, but look, it's our podcast. We can do whatever the hell we want anyway, and nobody can stop us. But we'll talk about these changes at ESPN, which does kind of affect the world of football because these are people that analyze football and talk about football. But yeah, a lot of changes, man. And you know, this is kind of something that I can kind of speak on in terms of being a journalist. Well, hell, you know, I consider Josh a journalist too now that he do the podcast. So, like, I feel like this is something we can speak on from the perspective of not just, like, having the podcast, but also from the perspective of a lot of these people are people we watched on TV since we were, like, kids. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're looking at these names on this list, man. It's Shannon, not Shannon Sharp. We'll talk about him later. But Keyshawn Johnson. Van Gundy, Coach Van Gundy, who, you know, love or hate him, you know, he is somebody that, you know, is well known at ESPN. Todd McShay, man. Todd McShay is.
Now that's one I could say. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That's one I could say that definitely did not see coming. I mean, other than him and Mel Kiper, I thought they were never going to get rid of them. So
me too.
Yeah.
Me too. But when you look at it, and now, you know what? I think that's where we'll veer off into the talking point here. And you can add on any other names, like big notable names I missed. Max Kellerman is another one. But going back to Todd McShay, now that I'm thinking about it and you bring it up, Josh, what it could be is they are moving to younger and cheaper contracts from that perspective. Now, look. You're not going to fire Mel Kiper because ultimately he's like the granddaddy of draft analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that like from like to say he's old or anything, but like, you know, Mel Kiper is where it start, you know, pretty much. It's Mel Kiper, then my man Daniel Jeremiah with NFL Network, you know, shout outs to him. He got the job after Mike Mayock left. But after them, like, it's everybody else after them two draft analysts, basically. And you could put Todd McShay, he was in that tier with them. But what I was saying is basically what they might be doing there is just looking for not just younger talent, but more affordable talent. Because you look at the changes they made over the last 2 years and we kind of like it kind of went under the radar. But Jordan Reed, who we've had on this podcast, by the way, Jordan Reed is now with ESPN as a draft analyst. So he was our first guest, I believe. I'm thinking about it. And he was with I forgot the establishment. He might have been with Cover One or somebody he was with, but he's now we see Jordan Reed on TV. It's crazy to say that. Like, we had him on our podcast, now he's on TV. Shout outs to him. But him and Matt Miller. They got Matt Miller recently from Bleacher Report. You see him from time to time on the morning show, Get Up. I think it's Get Up. They'll show him on Get Up. So I didn't think about it at the time, but adding two draft analysts of their magnitude, because I would know them from the Twitter realm and like their analysts. Like, I knew these guys before they were with ESPN. You essentially got two people that can fill that Todd McShay role. And I know that's hard to do and hard to say because it's Todd McShay, but I didn't think about it until now. they low-key brought those two in, and it kind of just went under the radar that they were bringing in two more analysts. That would have gave them four main draft analysts when you include McShay and Mel Kiper. It's just that's a lot of draft analysts for one network, but I think that might be the direction they're going in. But, yeah, man, what's your thoughts on these layoffs, man? And, again, it might be some other ones you want to mention, but what are your thoughts on these layoffs, man?
Yeah, I'm just going to name the notables, I guess. Yeah, Keyshawn, David Pollock, Susie Colbert, who's been there, what, 25, 20, 30 years, something like that?
Yep.
Like you said, Jeff Van Gundy, Jalen Rose, Max Kellerman, Todd McShay, Steve Young, Matt Hasselbeck. Like you said before, I think it's just a youth thing, and maybe Disney's trying to get rid of some of these contracts. I mean, because a lot of these guys are, you know, a fan favorite, you know, like Jalen Rose and JVG, so... you know, and Max is also, you know,
Jalen Rose is a personal favorite of yours too.
Start.
I'm just saying, bro.
Don't start, man.
I ain't gonna say. You know what? I'm gonna stop. I'm gonna chill.
But you know, also on the other side, you know, like we were talking about this on there, off there. Also, is like maybe they're trying to find, you know, money for Pat McAfee and maybe the potential of bringing Shannon Sharp in, right. What's the other guy we were talking about? Was it just those two?
It was just those two.
Yeah.
Well, no, the other name we mentioned was Mina Kimes,
who yeah.
we think probably wasn't cheap to keep.
Right.
I know her contract was expiring, and she's still there. So, like, they haven't mentioned that she's resigned, but obviously something happened because she's still there, and her contract was expiring. But, yeah, Mina Kimes I don't think was cheap at all. That was probably some, you know, after adding that contract into the mix, you know, you got to cut your losses and, like, or should I say cut ties with some people. That might explain, like, the Susie Colbert thing, you know.
And Neil Everett's gone. I'm sorry. You know who Neil Everett is, right?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, one of the sports center. Yeah, he's on this list. Bro. Yeah.
Man. But, yeah. It's probably that they're moving on to this new wave, this new – podcast format. I mean, and you know, here we are, you know, saying that, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking to see these people that we watched for years and years, but this podcast is kind of a testament of where digital journalism is at and going, you know. Yeah. And those things are or podcasting is something that a lot of these names that we're mentioning that they're getting these people to replace the people that are on their way out, they do well. You know, Mina Kimes is great podcast. I forgot her dog name, but her and the dog. And, you know, you look at the guys that's still there. Levitard, great at podcasting, great at getting views. Now, look, Mel Kiper's kind of...
Well, he's not on ESPN anymore.
Levitard isn't with ESPN anymore?
No.
Oh, wow. What happened to him?
You remember they got rid of the show, like, with him and his father... Was a highly questioned.
Really? I did not
know. But that happened like.
It's been a while though, huh? Yeah, because I haven't seen it.
Did it happen around the time Mike and Mike? No, it was a little bit after that. But but they got rid of that.
Dang.
They got rid of them a couple.
That makes sense too though.
Yeah, it was about 5 years ago. They're on their own network now. Because I saw Mina Kimes like on his show, but he wasn't on ESPN.
Wow.
And he was talking about. I don't know if you go look up the clip, but, you know, Mina Kimes was on Levitard's show.
Mm-hmm.
That's where she got her start.
That's why I was thinking they were still on ESPN.
No. Wow. They've been going for me.
They just got her.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was talking about how proud of her he was because, you know, that's like I said, that's where she got her start. But
right.
Levitard is like on a – I don't even know the company he's on now. But
it ain't like FanDuel or nothing, is it?
It might be. I don't know. But, the whole crew just went somewhere else. So
Right. Yeah, they probably, I mean, they still have, you know, OGs like Mel. Well, we'll see, like, there are more cuts coming. Mel and Stephen A. Smith, love him or hate him, to lead the way. But for the most part, aside from those two, it looks like they're moving to those that kind of cater towards that podcast audience that the media realm is made of now. We'll see who's in that next wave of cuts, because you know, like, that's just a stressful situation and all, just in general, is, you know, it's kind of like the WWE where we see they, you know, they cut these people and then they're like, well, they're not done yet. They're going to cut. It's like, oh, man, like, it's one of my favorite wrestlers about to get removed from the roster.
Yeah.
It's kind of a similar situation, and it's unfortunate, man, but I will say this. If they can, you know, get Shannon Sharp in there, that'll be huge. That's what I'm looking to see. I was reading that FanDuel was trying to work out something with them, which would be huge for them as well. In terms of, they already got Kay Adams. Her show is doing pretty good from what I gather, and I like it. But, yeah, if they can get Shannon Sharp in there to cover that morning shift that they've been kind of struggling with in terms of that morning audience, man, since they lost Mike and Mike show. Yeah. If they can get Shannon in there to, you know, take care of that morning audience, man, it, you know, they can be back on the up and up, man, making that bread. But still, nonetheless, you just hate to see all of these people lose their jobs. But these people, don't make no doubt about it, a lot of these people find their footing, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Because they, you know, they were pretty good at what they do. So, yeah, I mean, that's it for today's show, man. I guess we can now head into the closing remarks, man. What you got, any closing remarks or anything you want to leave on?
I don't think I have anything.
Yeah, I'm blanking. I mean, Lamar got his contract. You know, me and you kind of talked about it already, though. That was, like, the biggest one. Lamar got his contract. But aside from that, it ain't really too much, man.
I mean, Brady finally retired, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm still not convinced that he won't come back. To be honest with you, like, he say he's not coming back, but it's Tom Brady, man. Like, he might pull that old Brett Favre on us, man. Come back a few times. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Tom Brady, I always have eyes in the back of my head with him. It's like, I don't know. You gone, but I don't know if you really gone, bro. We'll see. Yeah, but, I mean, if it is the end, what a great career. Legendary. I don't think we'll see anything like it again in terms of what he was able to do and win Super Bowls and being a part of one of the best offenses I've ever seen in my life, that 2007 Patriots offense.
Yeah.
Somewhere near the top of my list, man. Him and Wes Welker and Randy Moss, man, just all elite, man. But I think we all, most of us can agree that he has done more than enough to go ahead and hang it up. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
It's time, man. It's time to, you know, I think Aaron Rodgers would be the next one. Let him, you know, replace you in terms of the role that you had to these quarterbacks and to the NFL. And after that, you know, let these young up-and-comers that we mentioned all throughout this podcast, Bryce Young and Richardson and Trevor Lawrence, Herbert in your case, let them, you know, take over.
Rodgers is the only one left, right? I mean,
that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Because Matt Ryan retired, right?
He hasn't retired. He is. I did read that he's going with CBS Sports, but he's open to coming back. You know, if somebody – offer him a deal. But really? I think he should retire at this point.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I would say retire.
Rivers is gone. Brady's gone. Breeze is gone. I don't think anybody else is left.
That's it, man. Yeah, man. Like, now we're going to be looking at Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott as the old heads. Like, oh, that's crazy. Because I don't think they ain't even 30 yet. Those two aren't. So, yeah, they technically would be the old heads.
Wouldn't it be – Tannehill's older than both of them, though, right? I don't know if you want to put him in that category, but ain't Tannehill?
Yeah, I mean, if he's still starring somewhere, yeah, he'll be
– Yeah.
He's, you know, he like 32, 33, somewhere up there. Yeah, Kirk Cousins, they're right around the same age.
Kirk, yeah.
Yeah, so – but, yeah, I guess that's a good place to leave on this podcast. I am James Johnson. You can follow me at sports_done on Twitter. You can follow Josh at Johnny Assassin on Twitter as well. Feel free to let us know your thoughts and comments on this podcast or anything else you want to shoot to us to have a conversation about in another podcast. Go ahead and shoot that to us too. But yeah, we appreciate you all lending us your ears, and we will be signing out into the next episode. Hopefully, it won't take nearly as long as this one. We'll figure out the timing on that, but you know, we'll let y'all know when we'll get back in the booth. It shouldn't be too much far into the future, but we'll get back at it and we'll talk some more football. So, yep, I'm James Johnson. That's Josh Sampson. We are signing out.